Take them all. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 170 is coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.theportalct. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, or on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That's where you'll find me, your host of this episode, number 170, The Brant, and I am entitling this one, Holy Schnikes! And that is my callback there to Chris Farley and Tommy Boy, one of the greatest movies of the 90s. Love that movie so much. My brother and I quoted it unendingly, especially when he'd come home from college. We would say, brothers don't shake hands, brothers got a hug! And we would do all that kind of stuff. So, it's Holy Schnikes, because Holy Schnikes, I've got a long list of games to review for you here. So, that's going to be this. I do want to say a big thank you to one of our listeners, Steve, who pulled the last podcast for me off the internet, because I recorded it solely on YouTube, thinking I could just take the audio, and I can't just take the audio. So he pulled that for me and did a bunch of editing, and I'm going to, you'll see both episodes drop at the same time. In terms of that, I've been a little lax with the podcast, with the channel and whatnot. But I definitely want to keep the podcast going, because this is where I get to do probably my favorite thing, which is review games and review a lot of games. And holy shnikes, do I have a lot of games to review for you today. And then I'm going to try to quick wrap around and do another episode, probably a shorter podcast episode where there probably won't be a lot of reviews. But I'm going to give you my top 10 games of 2021 thus far. I am back in full swing, playing too many games for any human being, and so there's a whole bunch of reviews here, but I'm not tending to play the same games 5, 10, 15 times. I'm back to playing games twice, and moving to the next game and all that kind of thing, so that's what's happening here, which I think I prefer. I'm a new games kind of person, and I totally understand that people aren't, which is why it's great to kind of give you these reviews of the various games. I don't really think they're passing reviews. I don't think it's like, oh, I only barely played that and I don't really know. I try to review games when I know how I feel about them. But I'm also not playing them 10, 12 times to really have something massively in-depth. But hopefully it is helpful for you. So sorry you're hearing my pen click, because I'm thinking of things and I'm talking and writing in terms of all those things. So, all right. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Wow, do I think I can review 16 games? I can do it. Here we go. All right. first up, Lost Cities Roll and Write. So Cosmos sent this over to us, and I will refer so often to, we did a live play of this on the channel. You'll see Kathy and I playing Lost Cities, the Roll and Write game. Obviously, I'm not the world's biggest Roll and Write game fan. However, I'm super well known for Fleet the Dice game being... Am I super well known? It's... People who know me well for the fact that I like Fleet the Dice game. I don't want... That's not intended to be arrogant. I think I just said it quick. Came out the wrong way. So, obviously, like, they're... One of my favorite games is a Roll and Write. I like Lost Cities Roll and Write. I thought this was fun, given there's actually been several Roll and Writes lately that I've played that I've really liked. So what's happening? So you've got a sheet. If you played Lost Cities the card game, it's kind of like that, but not really. But you're moving up in these different columns. So you've got six different expeditions. They're colors. And you, the further you move up in the column, every time you mark a box, you're going to get more points. You actually start out by getting negative points. So you may not want to go into one at all, because you're going to get negative points if you only get so far. There's also some columns where you can gain artifacts as you go up, and then there's a column where you can kind of refuse die rolls. So what you're going to do is you're going to roll six dice when it's your turn. There's three dice with the six colors on them, and they're six-sided dice, and there's three ten-siders. So then you take a pair. So you say, oh, I want purple one, and you take that, and then you mark a one in the purple column. And then the remaining four dice, the other players get to pick. They don't really, like, draft. Anybody, people can take the same dice, and they get to write a number in, or you can refuse. So that's kind of the idea of... what's happening there. You can refuse the dice, in which case you mark that column, which also goes from negative to positive the higher up you get, so you want to be doing that. The trick is that in each column, you can only mark the next box if that number is the number you wrote previously or higher. You can start with any number, but then you've got to roll that number or higher. So you start to get stuck as you move up a little bit more. You also have the option that you can draft a 10 in the beginning with a color, and you can mark the contract, and it actually doubles your points, but it also doubles your losses, so you have to be careful in terms of that. So it's definitely like a push-your-luck roll and write, but the decision tree is really interesting. Like, should I just go fast into these, or should I spread out and just try to get small amounts of points in multiple and really be able to do that? The game is going to end. There's kind of eight bridges, they call them, which are two-thirds of the way up of each of the tracks, including the refused dice and the artifacts. And when somebody crosses those, they get 20 bonus points, so the players can't earn them. If all of those get crossed, the game will end at the end of that turn, or you can be exhausted. So if you actually refuse too many rolls, you become exhausted, you get 0 points there, and when everybody's exhausted, the game will end. Sometimes you have to refuse the dice because you have all your columns are at 8, and you roll everything below 8, so you can't take any dice. So that's the game. It's fun. It's a fun push your luck. It says actually 2 to 5 players. It doesn't really feel like Lost City. Like, Lost Cities is this two-player game with a lot of tension. So if you really like Lost Cities and you're thinking you're going to like this, I don't think that's true. But if you like roll and write games, push your luck with decision trees. So it's like push your luck with decisions. Kind of reminds me of Port. What's that game called? Port Royale, which is a really good push your luck like Euro-style game, for lack of a better thing. So that is Lost Cities Roll and Write from Cosmo. Next up, I got a pair of games from WizKids, Jinja. So Jinja is a worker placement game that takes place like in a Japan-style location. And you're trying to put all these little huts out, and you've got all this worker placement, and you've got like a series of cards that you can play to be able to match things up to go to the locations. It just plays over a few rounds, but it's actually really interesting. The build is really strong. Like, you can play locations, you can play all these things, and you're trying to claim different regions and put different places out on the board. And as you claim those, you get bonuses at the end of each round. So you're kind of building up for those. And it's interesting in that the worker placement is almost like two steps. Like, okay, I can't directly do this, but I can do it indirectly. Like, I need to go get money, and then I need to place in this spot. And once you place a house in a region, you worker place to that region and place a house, nobody else can that round. There is like one space where you can pay to be able to do that. So it's kind of interesting on that front, balancing all those different things. I really like that it builds a lot more than I expected. Like, that in between the rounds, you get a lot more done than you think you're going to. It feels really limited at first, and then it feels like there's a lot you can do. And there's some interesting places, and it's really quite a gorgeous game. At the end of the day, I don't know that it's something I'm going to play a whole bunch. I don't know if it quite has like the it factor to really pull it out with somebody, but if somebody's interested in that, if they really like worker placement or maybe offbeat games, I might pull out Jinja. So you can check that one out. Jinja from WizKids Games. Next is Grease Lightning. And both of these were sent to us by WizKids, just to clarify that. So Grease Lightning is a Greek racing game. So I got a chance to play this a couple times. I played with my family. My wife and daughter are really into like Greek mythology, so I thought it worked well for them. And so you're racing around a circle. You have to do 2 laps around like a circle, and there's all these little wedges that make up the circle. So you place all these wedges kind of randomly, and you have to race around. There's little spots along them, and you can follow different paths, and then you land on things. So you might get fish, or you might get draw cards from a deck with random effects. You might have monsters where you have to give up fish. And then some spaces that let you move farther. I'm trying to remember all of them. I actually have the copy at the store to play with people there, so I don't remember exactly what all those things were. But there's all these little spaces you can land on. And so you're trying to, like, parse your way through in terms of doing that. The mechanism for kind of racing is you roll 2 dice, and one is like a D3, and the other is a D6. And then you have a further die you can roll, but you bust your movement if the second D6 you roll is lower than the first D6. I apologize. I can't remember if equal to which way that goes. So, and then you would lose both your D6s and only have your basic movement. So you got a little bit of push your luck there in terms of what your speed will be. But it kind of averages people out. So if I roll really low and I roll a 2 and a 1 and you roll a 2 and a 5, you're moving a lot further. But then I can roll another die. Maybe I roll a 3 and now it's negligible. So it's a pretty creative system. If you do bust, it's a little tricky to catch up with everybody. And then you're just running around, but what's really neat, oh, that's the spot I forgot. Some of the spaces you stop on give you more wedges. So you draw wedges, and then at the start of the next turn, you plop those down over spaces. You can't put them on top of people. You can't put them on the finish line or the lap marker. You have to allow that to be free. But you could change the course of the path that you go through, and then those cards really add a lot. Like Zeus comes in and strikes with a lightning bolt, or everybody gets a fish, or different cards like that. Your movement is increased for this turn. In terms of that, when I opened it, when I kind of played through it myself, I was like, I'm not sure this is going to be so good. But subsequent plays, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more. There was more to it. Like there was more fun and more interesting. Like, ooh, I could change different paths, which made me feel kind of clever. And there was the fun of drawing the cards or like rolling the dice to push the luck, which I thought was kind of interesting. And then just seeing how other people mess with your plans. It is tricky. It does seem to favor like the leader. Once somebody gets out in front, they can do really well. And it seems hard to try to stop them, even though you're placing those things. It's just not enough if you get slowed down by a busted roll or something like that. So, kind of tricky. I don't play a ton of racing games. Like I said, I brought it to the store, so I'm definitely gonna plan to bring it out on a game night. So it's one I'd like to play again. But I didn't find it like over the top phenomenal. But I think if people are into this theme, like my wife and daughter really liked the Greek mythology theme, so that was a big deal for them. Grease Lightning. All right, next up is one of my favorite games from this year so far, and this is Meadow from Rebel Studio. You can see a live playthrough of this on our channel. Brian and I just did that as of this recording yesterday from the portal. So Meadow is a game where like the whole theme is just like you're going out in nature and you want to find things and you're going for a walk and you want to spot things with your kids or your family or your walking partner, whatever it is. And it's just a card drafting game. So it kind of uses the mechanism from Quadropolis. You have these little path tokens with numbers, and I slot one in. There's a grid of 16 cards, and I slot it in from the side or down below. And then whatever number I put, I just take that card over. So it's a 4x4 grid. I pop my three in on the left-hand side, and I count three cards over. I draft that card. And then I can play a card. And the tableau is just all these biomes. So you can have 10 biomes, and you've got symbols, and you're trying to drop down different values on those symbols. Or sorry, using those symbols. So like, oh, I want to play this butterfly, so I need a grub and I need a tree. Now I can put the butterfly over either of those. And I don't have the grub symbol anymore, but I still have the tree and now I have the butterfly. And then on other turns, you can go over to the campfire. And on the campfire, you can kind of like claim things that you saw. Like, oh, at the same time, I saw a tree and a butterfly. And you can claim that for bonus points. And you get three things you can claim. The first one's 2 points, the second one's 3 points, the last one's 4 points, if you can find kind of those pairs that you're asked to do. And then the game just proceeds like that. You're playing all your path tiles, you get them back, next round, next round, next round. After three rounds, you reset the board and you kind of swap out the middle set of cards for a different set of cards. It's all directional, so north, south, east, west, and you swap south for north. And then there's a new set of cards that come out, and all the cards have points on them. So those points will increase, but the requirements will increase. There's other things too, like you can find locations like stone bridges and farmhouses and windmills. And then at those locations, you can find like a treasure at each. Like, ooh, I found a toy soldier, or I found a little wooden bowl, or I found a bunch of food that we could eat, like picked in the wild, or whatever it is. The art is just absolutely gorgeous. The gameplay is like buttery smooth. But the decision, so it's like the game is just so easy to teach and play. It's basically entry level on the game. But the decisions are just so awesome and how the board state changes. I have actually only played this one twice and two players, but each two player game I really played different. It sounds silly from a deck of cards that you're drafting, but what came out really determined a whole bunch of different things. In the game I played with Kathy, there was a whole bunch of treasures and things that came out, but with Brian, we like never saw them. And that really changed like that strategy of finding locations and treasures, and we really had to like hunt to get down, find the animals and the other critters and things. So I don't know off the top of my head. I will tell you on the next episode if this is my top game so far this year, but it is definitely up there and will be on the list. To me, Meadow is a go out, get it, play it. It's so good. Unless you really don't like light entry weight style games. Like if you just know I want heavier, I want crunchier, then you could just avoid this. But the game is absolutely gorgeous and super fun to play. I will be playing it a lot, especially at our game nights Thursday at the Portal. All right. Also yesterday we filmed a live play of Juicy Fruits from Capstone Games. So Juicy Fruits is in their family line. So they had Simply Complex. You Simply Complex. I like singing that. Now they have Capstone Family. Don't know if they're different. We'll have to see in terms of all those things. So what's happening in this game? So in Juicy Fruits, you are on an island and you are gathering fruits and then you're selling them. So you kind of have like a business where you're trying to make milkshakes for people and ice cream out of fruit, and you're trying to supply ships with the fruits, and you're trying to expand your business. So on your board, it's like those little puzzles. I think they call them like the 15 puzzle, where you can slide all the pieces around. And so you slide on the grid, you slide one of your tokens over, and that represents collecting. So I might collect two bananas by sliding that two spaces, and then I get the bananas. Now I can spend the bananas to supply a ship, and all the ships tell you what they have. And as I supply those ships, they remove from my board, so it gives me more space to slide back and forth. Or I can expand my business. There's like a little business board. I might get a stand that allows me to sell ice cream, like an ice cream cart. Or I might, what are some of the other things I could do? I could get like end game scoring, like cabanas or something. I could build myself a giant house or build a resort that are just worth points for the end of the game, stuff like that. And then I can also get these traveling business tiles, which are weird. They're the same like collection things, but they gain plus one and they have two fruits on them, so I can change what I get. And then with the module we played, you can also squeeze juice in the juice factory to make different drinks and move up kind of in this factory to gain points. It's real light. It's real straightforward. My biggest negative on the game, and I like the game overall, but my biggest negative was just it didn't have a lot of resistance. It just felt like I cleared my board, and then I'm able to just do this. Or I could just go wholeheartedly into that business thing and just kind of run the game down by just getting points ahead of people. So that's neat in that there's definitely different avenues, which is awesome. But it feels like you just go, you barrel right into one and the game never asks you to pivot. And I really like to pivot in games or be forced to pivot. And this one doesn't do it. It just says, here you go, pick a path and go with it and run with it. But again, it's Capstone Family. So it's trying to appeal to family. So this is something I could play on a game night with my family. I could play after dinner with my family. So that's where it's going. It's interesting with the Capstone on there because so many people think of Capstone as like, boom, grandiose and whatnot. And that's not where this game is. So Juicy Fruits was neat. I enjoyed it. You could check out our play on the channel. Next up is Subastral from Renegade. This is from Matt and Ben, the Fleeples, who designed Fleet the Dice Game and Renegade. So this is their follow-up to Stellar, so it's Subastral. Played this at two players. It wasn't so good. Played it at five players. Great. It really just worked a lot better. So I think the higher the player count, the better on this game. So Subastral is supposed to be, instead of Stellar, where you're looking at the stars, you look down and you're looking at biomes. So we see this again like Meadow. And so it's just some really clever card play with some complex scoring. I broke that down a little too easily. But it's you're playing cards to these six different clouds, and they have numbers on them. So if it has a three, I play it to the three cloud. And then I can either go left, and I can take cards from one of the other clouds, plus draw one, add those to my hand, or I can go right and I can take those cards and add them to my tableau in front of me. And they have like eight different biomes on them. So obviously if I'm taking cards, that's to give me more options to be able to play to put in my hand. If I'm taking cards to put in my tableau, that's giving me more ways to score. So how am I going to score? So the scoring is a little tricky. Basically, you want a complete set. So whatever card I have in the first column, I want to then continue all the way over to have different biomes, and that will score me a bunch of points. But in addition, I want to have biomes where I have a whole bunch. And the further out those are, like the further from the left of my tableau, the more points they score. So if I have six cards in my seventh column, that's going to score me six times seven, 6 times 7, which is 42. Whereas if I have six cards in my first column, it's going to score me 6 times 1, which is 6. So you got to kind of play it to understand that, or just kind of give somebody that visual to see it, which this is a podcast, so I apologize. But just know that the scoring has a little complexity to it that you have to focus on. And then that card play is just clever for where things are manipulating. The reason it's great at 5 and not at 2 is that you then add a card to whatever empty space there was, and then you guarantee that that two clouds have at least two cards. But in the two-player game, sometimes you just have to keep adding because you're adding to the same spot. And all of a sudden, somebody gets a spot with like 4 or 5 cards, and they gobble all those up. And that happened like several times in a row for me. So it doesn't really have that back-and-forth feel, which is kind of neat because so many games do. And then it's like, oh, why am I playing with just 3 or 4 players? But Subastral doesn't have that back-and-forth as much, but it has the around the table as things get cleared out and kind of spread that works a lot better. So it's kind of like a clever party game in terms of doing that. And those different things. I really like Stellar. That's a two-player game. That's super clever. That's up there with Pete Motts, their other one, in terms of that. Subastral is just kind of that fun one, like, oh, we have five and it's the end of the night, let's play this game there. But again, it's trying to come down a little bit and be a little bit more, you know, family or light gamer, or, oh, now I figure out my scores. You can play it twice in a row. It's so fast. It's like 15, 20 minutes. So that is Subastral. Next, whew, moving fast. Nidavellir. Okay, so I heard a lot about Nidavellir through 2020, and it wasn't out in North America, and it finally came out. So I got a chance to play, actually picked up a copy of Nidavellir, and I've played a lot of Nidavellir. And it is a drafting auction game for people who don't like drafting in auctions. That's the way I would put it. Because the auctioning is more like resource management. And the drafting is very, like, it's very small, little pieces at a time. So the theme is very thin, but it's basically like you're going to these taverns to recruit dwarves to go fight, and whoever makes the most glorious army by having the most victory points will win. And you're talking a lot of victory points, 200 plus in most games for the winner that I've seen. So you're getting a lot of victory points. So what do? You got these five gold coins, 0, 2, 3, 4, 5. Don't have a one. And there's three taverns, and they'll all have a number of they'll all have another dwarves equal number of players, except in a two-player game where there'll be a third one that goes away. And you're going to play six total rounds, kind of two phases. So you're going to take your coins, and you're going to say, ooh, I want to bid really high on the first tavern, really low on the second tavern, and super low on the third tavern. So you put your five, you put your two, and you put your zero out. And then everybody flips, and whoever has the highest bid from those tokens, so it's a lot like Ra, if you've played Ra, is going to get to grab from that pile. And there's this whole, like, you have these gems with numbers that break the tie, and then you switch the gems. That's the most complex part of the game, but it makes perfect sense. Not worth explaining here, but it's how you break ties in terms of that. So then you get to draft the various dwarves, and you add them to your collection. They're all kind of colors on them, and they do different things. So, like, green and purple are set collection. Red is supposed to be, like, whoever gets the most in red will then get to score their coins at the end of the game. Blue is, like, straight-up points. And then orange has, like, a multiplying, like, exponential multiplying system. So it's very mathematical in that nature. So you're flipping over all your coins, but what's really clever is if you bid zero on one, then the two coins you didn't use that round, because remember you have five, you only bid three of them, you sum those up. Ooh, I left my four and my three. So now I get a seven from the, like, grid. There's, like, a set of them. I get rid of my three, I add a seven, and now I have a seven. At the end of the game, you're going to score points for all of your coins. You're going to move those up. They max at 25. And the part that's really clever is, let's say the seven wasn't there. Well, then I get an eight. Oh, there's no eight, so I get a nine. So you can actually move up further by timing all of that out and getting other things. So you're kind of increasing your coin count to be able to maximize those points and everything. And then where the game really shines is if I... So I obviously want to go deep into, like, some colors to set collect and get points and things. But also, if I go wide and I get a set of five, then I can draft, like, a leader or hero. I think they're just called leaders. And there's all these cards. And this is the other part that slows the game down, because there's a few that are just kind of complex. Like, ooh, this one can jump in at the end of the round and be this, and then it can switch to another column, and yada, yada, yada. But some of them are really straightforward. Like, you just get 10 points at the end of the game by drafting this leader. So that makes it really interesting, because then you can switch up your strategy. Whether you're forced to or not, you can pull different things from over there. And there's a lot of them. There's like 20, different leaders that you can get. And every time you get a set of five, you get another leader to add. And that leader has color, so it might complete another set of five. You can go get another one. So you can kind of have that fun explosion turn where you get a whole bunch of things. So you play through, halfway through the game, you kind of give out these rewards, like bonus tokens or coins or cards or whatever it is halfway through for people who are leading. And then at the end of the game, you just do your points and see who won. And like I said, it's typically 200, 250 for the leader, somewhere in that spot, maybe not quite 250 or so. And it's just a lot of fun. Like, people look at it like, I don't know, I don't like auctioning, I don't like drafting. I'm like, perfect, you're gonna like this game. So it's really good. And since it's almost all simultaneous play, it slows down a little bit. The passing of the gems to me slows down. So as I was teaching it, then other players were able to kind of focus on that for me so I could keep the game going. It really sped us up, and it doesn't take long at all. So it feels like it's going to take a while and explain it. And then boom, it's 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Really any player count, I think. And it works really well at two. I've played it at two and it works great. So it's awesome that you can play a game from two to five and both work super well. So it's a game night game at home, and it's a game night game at game night at the game store. That was just fun to say. All right, tongue twisters. Nidavellir. All right, I got a chance to play Crack the Code. So Eric Summer's been coming over and playing some, and he brought this over from Indie Studios, Indie Boards and Cards. And Crack the Code is like a cooperative puzzle game. So you've got this card that says, oh, and we start on the simple level, and it says, oh, you need to have three blue marbles in front of you. And there's 12 marbles. So there's four players. So we set out all the marbles and I need to have three blue in front of me, but I don't, I have all these other colors. Now it looks like it's supposed to be like hidden. And I don't actually know what's in front of me, cause I don't know the order. As you progress through the game, it's important to realize some of them say you need to have from left to right, blue, red, yellow. So then that matters. But when I only need three in front of me, it doesn't matter. So you're trying to then, there's a set of action cards, and on your turn, you take an action. It might be, oh, switch to two of your, not opponents, what do I want to say? Fellow players, cooperative players, switch two of their marbles, or give one of your marbles to another player, or take one from another player. So obviously when you give, you can't see what you have. And as you progress, there's going to be more and more things. We kind of played on the simple level. And then you're just limited on those actions. Once those actions run out, then you have to have gotten there. So you have to have kind of like made the perfect switches, and you can kind of reset and go through it to do a better job in terms of all that. It's pretty fun. As we were doing it, we were finding more layers to the thought process, but it did seem like in some of the games we played, some of the games were being played, that it was like, you couldn't, like sometimes it was just 50-50. I need to pass you this, but I don't actually know what it is. So I have to hope. I know it's either yours or yours, but I don't know whose. And then I pass it and it was the wrong one. And that might be the thing that sets you behind. But it does have a little leeway. Like, it doesn't feel like you have to get it perfect. It's not like there's 16 moves and you get 16 actions. It's like there's 16 moves and you get 18 actions. So if you do one or two wrong, you still can kind of come back. But I think you could replay it because of that. It's like, again, it's not this whole what's hidden. It's more how can we get there in the least number of moves and be efficient. So it might have some replayability there, and I'd be interested to see how it unpacks more. So that is Crack the Code. Next up, I think, is my hidden gem for the year. I'll actually show it on the video here. This is Embarcadero. So Embarcadero is from Renegade Games. And I didn't even know about this. So what happened after the gold rush in San Francisco is there was all these boats abandoned in the harbor. So entrepreneurs went out and got the boats and brought them in and like built shops on the docks. And I guess it's still there today. That's the Embarcadero that's out there. I don't really know a ton of the history, but that was super interesting. I showed the game to Kathy, and she's like, wow, that's gorgeous. And I actually got to play with a group. I've only played this one once, I will say that, but I played it with a four-player group. And it was real good. I really liked it. I had not heard much. It's very streamlined. So what are you doing? So you're trying to gather boats to add to the wharfs or the docks and that you want to place. And then you're trying to build those up. You've got little, basically, cubes that are your structures. And then on those structures, you can build various shops. So you're trying to build structures and shops and gather boats. And then each wharf is going to have like a scoring, like who's got the most structures on that wharf system. And the buildings are going to give you victory points and in-game stuff. So that part is kind of interesting. So the card play is the most clever part of this. So I'm going to kind of focus on that because it's actually a pretty big game. Like, I'd put it at, is it above medium? Once you play it, it feels medium. But it sounds medium heavy is kind of where I'd put it. So it's like just a tad above medium heavy in my mind. So you get dealt 8 cards at the beginning. You get rid of 3 of them, you have 5 cards. So now on your turn, you play a card. And cards are simple. They're either a boat, which has a bunch of things where you add a boat to the dock and you claim it. You can put some structures on it. Or it's a building where you already have structures in place and you can put a building on there. And they cost money and resources. So then once you build it, you kind of put it in your tableau, which is splayed. So boats will give you resources, like you just have them permanently, and buildings may as well, but buildings cost resources. So not spent, it's just like, oh, do you have access to wood? Do you have access to 2 wood? Perfect, you're all set. Things like that are kind of what you're going with, and then maybe some coins, or you might gain coins. Oh, gosh. Okay, cat. So on your turn, you're playing one of those cards, you're adding it to your tableau, And then you draft another card from these rows or columns. I can't remember which they are because it's the game that kind of got me going on rows and columns. And you draft a card out of there. And then you put the card in your hand, and then you set aside one card from your hand to your tab. Is it a tableau? Like to your player board, and that is going to be building your hand for the next round. And that costs money to draft a card. At the end of the game, the money you spent will instead convert to victory points, which is a really clever way of having you spend your money at the end of the game just to get victory points. Rather than saying, oh, money is victory points, you have to actually set aside cards. And if you have money left over, it just means you didn't buy cards that were enough to give you victory points. So that was really neat. Then you refill those rows. So that's kind of the idea. That's that structure. That hand management is the part that's really interesting. Then there's a whole area control thing, and I struggle. What are they not? Area majority, I think, is what it is. I struggle with those types of games, but I managed to like have a character that had a power and worked their way through all that. So yeah, I really enjoyed this game a lot. There was one part. There's like this city council where you can move up as you place adjacent to people. Yeah, you move up on the city council, and eventually you kind of put out like bigger buildings, like landmarks and things. And those are like up for grabs for anybody. It's a little random. So that system I could see like real Euro game, real strategy focused people not liking the randomness. So it might be that you flip that card and know what's coming once it's available. That could be a way to do it. I'm going to try to solo play this on the channel because the solo play I think will work really well. So it's not on the channel yet, but I hope to get one up there. Probably not this week and probably not next week because I'm away half of next week. Kath and I are both turning 40, so we're going away. And so it'll probably be the week after that when I finally get to it. But, yeah, it's been really fun. I like Embarcadero, so definitely look into it more. Don't just take my word, see what it is, because I think it's going to be a certain group of people that will like it, but it's my hidden gem. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All right, here we go. Next up is Sheepy Time. I almost said Sleepy Time. Sheepy Time is from AEG. It's a very interesting kind of racing game where you're trying to do laps with your sheep to help people gain winks to fall asleep. That's kind of the idea. It looks like a kid's game, but it's definitely not. So you have two cards in your hand. You play one. It's going to say you can move one space or four spaces. You can move four spaces or you can add a token to one of the special abilities. And so you're just moving around. And every time you move 10 spaces, you jump a little fence and you add a wink. And you're trying to get 40 winks. That's how you win in a single round. If you land on next to a space that has a bonus with your token, you can spend the token and then you can use that bonus, which might say jump ahead five spaces or, I don't know, draw two cards from the stack and keep one or various other abilities, like that. So there's all sorts of different abilities that you can get. But meanwhile, there's a nightmare. So there's three different nightmares you can play with in the box. There's like the big bad wolf and the boogeyman and the spider, I think. And they chase you around, and if they catch you, then what do you do? You become scared, and then if they catch you again, you wake up, and you're out of the round, in terms of all that. So then you're just trying to progress. You're actually not trying to get 40 winks in a round. You probably won't. At any point, once you jump the fence, you can bow out, and now you just stop at whatever winks. And then at the end of the round, based on players, you have like a little pillow that's at 40 winks. And if you were in first, let's say, in like a three-player game, you're going to back that pillow up 10 spaces. So now you only need to get to 30 winks the next round. So you're trying to just be somewhere in there. What's interesting is as people bow out, it becomes actually easier for the people. So the push your luck is almost on the people bowing out than on the people staying in. It's real clever. It's really quite fun. It doesn't seem like it's going to be super fun. It feels like it's going to be a kid's game. And it's got a lot of randomness and a lot of push your luck, but it's a lot of fun. I'm starting to smile bigger and bigger as I talk about it. So I'm just thinking about how much I enjoy this game. So definitely check out Sheepy Time. I don't know if I could say like it's just a go out and buy for anybody, but definitely a go out and play. I mean, this game do so well with conventions. People would be playing this left and right. It's got like that clever play with those really fun moments. And, like, I've seen multiple games now where people are way behind, and the last round, they just go, because what do they got to lose? And then they win the game all of a sudden. It happened against me. It was still fun. Like, I still kind of wanted the person to do it. It reminds me of King of Tokyo when I want somebody to roll six claws and eliminate someone. Like, I'm on your side. Do it. Eliminate me. It would be so fun to see you do that. So, it has a clever factor, even though there's a lot of fun randomness factor there too. And I don't mean those to be directly opposite. I realize that clever can be fun and fun can be clever, but it's just the easiest way for me to break things down. All right, next up is Destinies. Destinies is from Lucky Duck Games. Destinies, a huge smash game, smash hit, it seems like. So it's like an app-driven story game. So in Destinies, yeah, you're going to get a character, and then you're trying to complete like your objective first. So it's essentially a race. It's very app-driven. It's very world-building. It's kind of like somebody running an RPG for you. There's a lot to read, a lot to pay attention to, a lot to interact with. I really found it quite enjoyable, yet I don't really want to play it again. It feels like you play through a story, and then the other story is going to be like, go here instead. And you're like exploring locations and gathering items. The attack and the like system are interesting. You have little markers along a board, and then you're rolling dice, and every die that rolls that number or above is a success. So you might be able to get three successes because you might be on 4, 8, and 9. And you're able to roll those dice. Is it that number or... Somehow that feels backwards. I apologize. Yeah. So you can get successes off of those. So you're trying to roll those various numbers to be able to get there. So it's that part's kind of interesting. Again, a lot of the game is really interesting. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed my plays. I don't know why it is. I don't want to go back. I'm not a big story game person, so that could be part of it, but I'm not a story game person. But it feels like the stories are a little bit too samey. I'd like to see some different things. There's a whole bunch of expansions and people that got the Kickstarter. I only played the base game that came into the store. So people might tell me that, oh gosh, when you play the campaign and you play this, you play that, like you really get into it. Yeah, that's kind of all the game is, even though there's just a lot once you're in there and you're doing that. There's a ton of little miniatures, and they're really fiddly because they're teeny tiny miniatures, and you have to find which one is which. It's not really necessary because they're labeled in the app, so you can just kind of move around the board and have those, but it adds to that flavor and that theme, and people enjoy the miniatures. So there's that piece. So it's kind of a take it or leave it, but I don't mean that to be a mediocre review because I did like the game. So if it sounds interesting to you or you've been watching it and you're like, ah, if I hear one more person say good things about this, I'm going to try it. Let me be the one more person that says good things about it and have you try it. In that. Would I play it if somebody suggested it? I would. I would play it if somebody suggested it. I probably won't suggest it myself. Whatever that means, you can figure out what that means in my brain, but... that would be that. All right, next up is Merchant's Cove. This one's not on our channel yet, but it will be because Carl Van Ostrand, who designed this, along with others, is local to us in Connecticut. So he's going to come on stream and play Merchant's Cove with us. So Merchant's Cove is a big game. It's a Euro game where you're merchants in this cove. See what I did there? And you are trying to sell to all the people that come into the city. So they're coming in by boat, and you want to be ready to do that. So really the big thing about Merchant's Cove is that there's four in the base box, and then I think there's like three or four other characters that you can play, and all the characters play wildly different games. So you're playing a dice rolling game, somebody else is playing like a ship management game with a spinner, somebody else is playing a marble game, kind of a la Gizmos or Potion Explosion to gather marbles. And what are some of the other ones? I don't even remember what some of the other style of the games are. I think those are most of the ones that I've played or seen played or taught, because it was taught to me the first time. And so you're doing that to craft items. You got small items, you got big items, and you got four different colors, your primary colors plus green. And then the whole thing is driven where the connecting point is there's like an action wheel, and whoever's furthest behind gets to go next. That whole patchwork is where I think of it, but there's other things before that, kind of a time-driven mechanism. So that's what kind of keeps everybody honest on the same. You can draft workers, and then you can take corruption. So you can kind of be corrupt, and you'll score negative points of the game. But you might be like, hey, this corruption's going to score me -3, but I'm going to get 8 points off of it, so I net points from being corrupt. So that's kind of how that goes. So you're taking actions back and forth, kind of a la side. You're moving around the board and picking the actions you want to do that make sense for you. A few of them are common, like drafting those assistants to come into your location, but both of them are very unique. And then at the end of the round, and then as you're doing that time wheel, you have to draw customers from the bag, and you add them to the boats, and they're the different colors. So you're trying to like, oh, I'm crafting a lot of large reds, so I want to make sure that red meeple show up at the dock where those are sold. There's also a black market where you can sell anything, but you take corruption, right? So you're trying to get the most money, and money is victory points. So you're just trying to maximize that score and lose your points at the end of the game. So all that kind of works out kind of simple when you explain it that way. The complexity is really in your character and figuring it out. Now, I think that there's a lot, there's definitely a lot of asymmetry in those characters, but they are basically all able to craft about the same amount. Obviously, you could be a little more clever in terms of what you're doing or a little more I guess it's not a lot of dexterity, even though there's like spinning and potion explosion. It's more just how will this mechanism work. So you're ending up with kind of the same assortment. So really, it's that boat. Those boats coming in that determine kind of who's going to be able to sell what. And you can hold off items, but you don't always. So it's that boat manipulation. And that can be a little bit cutthroat. So you've got to kind of decide where you want that to be for you and how that's of interest. You can also change, there's these rogue meeples that come in and they're gray. And you can change their ability based on kind of cards that you could put into play at the start of the game, where you might be able to take corruption to change them to any color, or they just block, they don't do anything, or there's some other interesting ones that I just can't remember off the top of my head, I apologize. But these kind of things they can do. So that part is really interesting in terms of what's going on. The asymmetry of the characters is certainly fun. I'm the kind of person I want to play a different character every time, so that's really neat. I don't know how you teach this to people, but you definitely teach the main board first, and then you teach everybody their individual ones. It probably would be best to play this like with two and three the first time, just to not overwhelm people. But it does come with a little booklet. So like when I taught Kathy, she just read her booklet, I read my booklet, and we were good. We didn't have to worry about that. Like so people could just kind of read their own and be responsible for learning their own character, in terms of that. It's fun. It's really fun. It's fun to change up those. The asymmetry, I could have gone further on asymmetry. I could have enjoyed, like, oh, I'm not even, like, I'm trying to buy things from people and then sell them and kind of change some of that up. But there's definitely a lot in the game, so there isn't a major reason for all that to do all that and whatnot. What was I saying? There's not a major reason to have to switch all that up because there's plenty in the game. But just some of those things might have been a little bit, a little bit more interesting, a little bit more intriguing. But overall, I do really enjoy the game. It's definitely something we want to play again. I've played several times now. I'm going to stream it because that'll be super fun. It'll be neat to see some of the ideas that Carl had and whatnot. And it's just cool to have a local designer that's making stuff. Not that this is the only game that a local designer's ever made, but it's kind of one of the bigger ones that's come out. So it'll be neat to do that. So I definitely think it's a play before you buy. There's a lot to it, and you might want to decide how all in you want to be. In terms of that, but everything's available from us, and you can find things along the places and whatnot. But really neat game, really, really clever in its approach. So if you just want a game that's just different, that's what this game does really well. It just feels different from most things that are out there on the market. Awesome. So next up is Imperium Classics and Legends. So again, you can find a playthrough of this on the channel. In fact, you can find five playthroughs. I played this five times. On the channel, I went through the whole solo campaign, so needless to say, it's real good. This will be on my top 10 of the first half of the year for sure. So the biggest complaint that people probably have is that this is a Civ game, and I just don't. I mean, I guess it's a Civ game because you're picking a faction and you're running with them, but I don't really think of it as a Civ game. It's a card game where you're representing a faction. You're not really like warring with other factions and fighting. That stuff's all very abstracted. You're kind of deck building and you're trying to maximize and then, add new cards and work through your deck that way. So that's kind of the most interesting part of the game. But I definitely feel like if people said, like, oh, come play this amazing Civilization game, I would feel let down from that. Also, the rule book, I really haven't had major issues with the rules. However, I did make a lot of rules mistakes playing through the solo campaign. So the solo mode has like these bots. And there's a lot to it. So you definitely want to watch those videos if you're considering playing this for solo mode, because you have to decide. I actually enjoy the complexity of running the solo bot because it makes the factions feel very different. And that's the part that I really want to focus on, is that there are eight factions in Classics, eight factions in Legends. That gives you 16 factions, and they really do feel different. There are a few that feel the same and a few others that feel the same, but there's no way that you're going to say, like, oh, there's 16 and they all play the same. No. These two play very similar. These two play very similar. And, you know, they all can focus around a few cards that are common amongst them, but then you're drafting cards from what's out there and you're trying to work your way through what's good and who works with who. So it's just like really fun to unlock all that stuff. So I will say that the solo campaign was probably not my favorite way to play through because you're playing the same faction five times, and I like to switch factions. I've also enjoyed solo games a little bit more than multiplayer games. Multiplayer, you're really heads down, you're not paying attention to other people, but again, it's just that exploring that I enjoy and try to figure all that out and whatnot. So again, I don't actually think the rulebook is bad. I just think the game is complex. It's just intricate. And so it's just one of those games that you're not going to get the rules right on the first play, the second play, or perhaps your fifth solo campaign playthrough where I botched the bot. So apologies there if you're watching that one. But again, you can get a feel for that. And I had actually already lost the campaign off camera. So there's that piece. Love Imperium. Snag it. I guess it's hard to come by. We still have copies at our store. So if you're local to us, you can pick up copies. But Imperium Classics and Legends is magnificent. Great game. Really like it. All right, three to go. Summer Camp. Summer Camp is a new game from Phil Walker Harding and Buffalo Games, and it's available in Target only at the moment. It'll probably be available to us, but I like to review all games regardless of where they are. So Summer Camp is the light deck builder of all light deck builders. It is, you're at a camp. What's really fun is you've got seven different things you can do: archery, water sports, games, crafts, friendships, and you open three of these boxes. And then you're kind of like competing to kind of achieve your badges for each of those. So you're actually walking a path, but that's just the fun way they do it with your meeples. And once somebody gets to the end of all of those, it'll trigger the end of the game. And you're just deck building. There's two cards out from each of those. And then you're playing cards from your hand. Every card is an energy to buy other cards. And then cards will give you abilities like move forward on this path. And you can buy new cards to add them. And each of those little modules plays different. So one might just say, hey, this one allows you to move forward and draw more cards. This one allows you to like trade cards with people. This one gives you a really big bonus and everybody else at the table a little bonus because it's a friendship one. And those modules make it great. But the icing on the cake for this game is that as your meeples step forward on those tracks, there's little bonus spaces. And so in a turn, even though you're like, I'm going to step one space forward, it says draw another card or gain a snack, which is an energy you can spend. And that is just great when designers focus in on like my turn. How can you make my turn fun, not just the overall game? Give me little things to work my way towards that aren't the end game goal. And this game does it really, really well. Now, it's a really light deck builder. You know, so if you play with gamers who play all the time, they're gonna be like, why would I play this when I could play this heavy deck builder that I like? I mean, even Dominion or something like that with new modules. But it's fun. It makes you feel like you're at camp. I don't even like camp, and I kind of wanted to go to camp after playing this. Like, ooh, I want to make s'mores and go canoeing. That sounds great. But generally, camp is not my favorite because it's kind of like they dictate what you should do, and I like to dictate my own time, not out of like being a rebel, just out of I'm good. I can find ways to entertain myself. I can go live on the internet and record a podcast. Hey, for people listening to the podcast, I recorded this one live on the internet. I am dual recording, so I don't have to go back and figure that out. But you can watch the podcast on the channel. Step into the portal. All right, Geritosh. Geritosh was sent to me by BJ from Board Game Gumbo, who was on here and told us how great it was and got a chance to play it. Our play didn't work out super well, so I definitely need to go back and play again. And I honestly haven't had a chance because I'm starting to roll into that so many games. I totally trust him. I think that the game is great, but we just had an issue where there were too many of them, too many of the people disappearing. So the theme is great. You're monsters, and you're trying to gather up villagers, but you can only gather up villagers if they're alone. So you have to run into their campfire, scatter them, and then go collect them. You're doing this through some card play and some clever mechanisms and other things that work around. And then there's these two Keritosh, which are the like mega monsters, and they're like NPCs, and they can run into you and, excuse me, gather up your monsters so you can't use them. So that's kind of the idea. You're running around the board and you can hop, and the mechanisms for all the different monsters. So you get two different monsters. Again, they're asymmetric and they can actually like hop from location to location. So it's really a matter of like getting the right cards to play in combination with that, which can really make you feel clever. But then it can be getting the wrong cards and not being able to play those. And that happened to like two of our players, me being one of them. And then the other two players really like drew cards that they were able to play. So we felt like maybe a row of cards, kind of like Ticket to Ride, where you could draw from might work a little bit better. And then there's kind of like these goals you can go for, and those can be tricky. We were actually gathering up the goals and then completing them immediately, and you have to wait a turn. So that'd be interesting to see how that goes. So our game was a little lopsided in that two players couldn't get a lot done and two players could get a lot done. And that just kind of felt a little emptying. So I'm going to give this one another play. I'm actually really intrigued to play it with two players because I think it might be one of those games that plays better at two with a lot of back and forth where I'm not like, oh gosh, like none of this is going to be left. I'm going to set something up and then none of it's going to be left on my turn. But in a two-player game, that won't be true. There will still be stuff left. So that is that. But thank you to BJ for sending that over. I'll try to get another play, and I think I'll put it in the library at the store is what I'm going to do with that game so more people can get a chance to play it. And then last up, I'm going to review an old game because I don't want it to just be new games, although that was 15 new games, 16 new games. But I finally acquired a copy of La Granja. So this is from Spielworks, and this is such an amazing game. This is real close to my top 10, definitely in my top 25. This is a game, it's farming, but it's multi-use cards. So you can play a card to be a field where you can grow olives or grapes or grain. You can play a card to be an assistant where you can get a bonus, like, hey, when you get coins, get an additional coin. You can play it to be a contract you have to complete to go to market. So they're going to need pigs, they're going to need olive oil, and they're going to need grapes. So when you complete that, you can go to market. Or you can play it as like an upgrade card, which might give you an extra space to hold a pig, or some income every round, or additional deliveries, because you get deliveries. Then you, after you kind of do some of that stuff and play cards, then you roll dice, and it has that just, so multi-use cards are awesome when used this way, and then it has like the roll dice and draft mechanism, so you roll, sorry, 2N plus 1, so double the number of players plus 1. That's my algebraic teaching coming out. So with two players, you roll 5. With 3 players, you roll 7. With 4 players, you roll 9. And you draft dice, and then the leftover die everybody gets. Yay, everybody use that mechanism. That is the greatest mechanism of all time. Super fun when everybody gets to use the leftover die. It just makes decisions that much more. And, ooh, I could take that. Oh, but if that was leftover, ooh, then I'd get this twice. Ah, so good. So it uses that to, like, collect your various resources, and then you make deliveries to the market, and you're trying to either deliver like to the places themselves to kind of have control of the market, or you can deliver to like these special deliveries where you can get upgraded abilities or one-time strong use abilities. Oh, it's so good. Engine building, multi-use cards, dice drafting with the leftover die. I mean, these are just three absolutely awesome mechanisms used at their peak enjoyment level. It is a clever game versus a fun. It's not a laugh out loud kind of style game, but it's more that. And I know the farming theme might not be everybody's, but wow, it's just such a great game. So if you haven't played La Granja, check it out. If you're local to my area and you want to play it, message me so we can play it because it's that good. It's one of those games I want to keep playing and keep playing and keep playing. In fact, it made me go dig out No Siesta, which is the dice version from Brian's collection, so I could play it. Sorry, Brian. In terms of all that. Woo! Holy shnikes! That was an episode. I just reviewed all those games. 16, 17 games. I'm not going to count again. I think I counted several times during that. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. That's episode 170. A whole bunch of games getting reviewed. And there's a whole bunch more coming. Because I'm playing games all the time. So we'll keep them coming at you. Thanks so much. If you wanted to comment about any of the games, you can do that. Tweet me at PortalGaming60. Or you can send me a message, an email, portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com, or just on Facebook. You can find me there and send me a message, and I'd love to hear about what you're playing. If any of these games sound interesting to you and you want to know more, I'd be happy to talk with people about that. But until next time, I'm the Brant, and I hope you step into the portal. Bye, everybody. Have a good one. And...